Welcome to Mintel's Little Conversation, real conversations with actionable insights into what consumers want and why. My name is Andrew McDougall, and I'm Director of Beauty and Personal Care Research at Mintel, and I'm excited to bring you our latest installment chatting with more of our lovely experts. Today, we're going to be taking a look at one of the hot topics right now that we get asked so much about and that we're definitely looking into a lot. Diving into this world of artificial intelligence, but also its implications for businesses like ourselves, but also for our clients as well. So with this, I need to have some bright brains to have this conversation with, and I'm delighted to be joined by two of my esteemed colleagues and experts in this area. First up, we have our very own Senior Vice President of Mintel Futures, Jason Thompson. Been on the podcast before, but welcome back, Jason.
Hi, Andy. Good to be back.
It's great to have you back. And I'm also excited as well to be joined by our Senior Vice President of Data Science and Analytics, Ben Arnold. This is my first time speaking to you on the pod, Ben. But again, I know you've done stuff in the past. So yeah, definitely happy to have you. So hello, Ben.
Hi, Andy. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you both here today. And I actually have so many questions that I want to ask, but I do have a sort of a vague structure that I should stick to as much as possible. But kicking us off, there seems to be this kind of growing interest and also apprehension about the capabilities of AI and how it will help us in the workplace, as I say here at Mintel, but also business in general. This kind of should I play or should I go now? It's kind of what can I be doing with it, as it were? So with this, I've also heard some terms been thrown out about AI, which I've not heard anywhere else. And one of these is FOBO. I don't know if the two of you have heard of FOBO, this fear of being obsolete. So my first question to kick us off is really looking at when it comes to AI and what we know about it, how does this kind of FOBO impact businesses? And why do market research companies and businesses in general need to be proactive in learning about new technologies?
Okay, I'll start off and then Ben jump in at any time. It's something we're hearing from chief execs and investment companies that the senior stakeholders in every organization have been really pushing people to look at AI and in particular generative AI. And it's all blown up, as I'm sure everyone knows, in the last couple of years. And I think the reason is that it feels like there's something magical. When they released ChatGPT and it could do all these amazing things, it felt like it was a real pivotal point and that the world was going to change. And so I think everyone got really excited about it. Someone I was talking to who runs a generative AI company, he liked to describe it as if before computers could calculate, they could add up and they could do sums and they could do analysis, now computers can read and write. And if you think about what opportunities that gives you, a lot of business activity is about reading and understanding and then about creating content. And so that's why I think people are so excited about it. But no one knows what it means yet. Everyone, everywhere is still trying to figure out what it means. And so that's where I think people are kind of scared of getting left behind. I know that when we released our first generative AI product and it was in development, we felt like we were in a race. We released Mintel Leap. We pre-released it last December. And it very much felt as we were developing it that there was a race to get it into production. So that's kind of my take on it. That's why I think it's so prominent at the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting, Jason. I think I agree with everything you're saying, but I think there's something that's worth highlighting with this technology and others that have come up in the past. And I think this is where the term FOBO comes up, this fear of becoming obsolete. I think that when a new technology that seems like it could have a big impact comes onto the scene, and I think generative AI and what OpenAI has done and what ChatGPT has shown is one of those that has just hit us by storm. I think sometimes businesses overreact to a specific technology because they're afraid of that technology forcing them into obsolescence, right? Just something's going to happen. They don't know what it is, but the way they're doing business isn't the way that they're going to do business anymore. And so they just dump everything into, we have to figure out how to use this tech and everyone has to use this tech. There's another research company, Gartner, you know, they have their hype their hype cycle. And I think very much this Gen AI, you can just see this hype cycle play out time and time again, where there's this huge peak of a new technology hits the market. Everyone goes in like crazy. Hey, we have to figure out what this is. But I think there's something critical that a lot of companies do that I want to highlight that causes this hype cycle to fall into what they call the trough of disillusionment, where they've invested a ton into it. It doesn't do what they thought it would do. And so then they just think, oh, this tech was stupid. It wasn't there. It's not going to do what I want it to. And then there's a few companies that actually identify real valuable use cases for it. And over time, that becomes better known. And so I think we're at this point where some people are just saying, hey, do something with Gen AI. Other people are saying, this is scary. I don't know how this is going to impact us. Like, let's control this. The thing I would say, and I think what we're doing, and I think what's really important here is with any tech, but especially this one, it's identifying what it is that you're trying to do as a business. Like, what are those things that you have? And then if a new technology can actually help on those business objectives, on those use cases, then yeah, invest in it. So I think companies should always be looking at what new tech is coming, but I think they have to be really careful to make sure they're mapping it to their specific use cases. Think about how it can disrupt them, but I think they over-index on that side of it, and they end up missing the applicability of the things.
I think you're right. I think it's going to take some time to play out. But it does feel like this is a bit different. You know, like the smartphone there was a hype cycle, but it was a fairly shallow trough of disillusionment there. It didn't take long until the applications were found. And I think that there's so much happening so quickly now. It feels faster than before as well, actually. And I think that is a bit disorienting. But I know for us, we've got a massive long list of things we want to try and applications we can see. And it's my job, but I think that this is going to be really, really impactful.
I think you're right that this could have a shallow trough. I think that for some industries, it might be shallower than others, right? There's some use cases that are really obvious and that we have to go after, and that other companies probably are taking advantage of this pretty quick as well as us. But like this use case that we have, which is we have loads of content and insights and research that's all in written form that is immensely valuable, but there's so much of it. It actually is, it's valuable mm-hmm. because there's so much of it and because it's so rich, but it's actually a lot of work to go through it because there's so much of it, right? That use case is perfect for this Gen AI, help me find what I'm actually looking for very quickly. That's a perfect use case. And I think it's where we've, raced to use this as quickly as possible. I think that's what other market researchers really should be doing is what are those use cases that this actually is going to impact and go in on that. Not just, hey, you have to use this technology. You have to just use this wherever and whenever you're using it.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of thought that it will change. It will change customer service. You know, we've had chatbots, customer service chatbots around for, I don't know, almost 10 years, and the horrible interactive voice response systems that where you get through and end up shouting down the phone because they don't understand you. Well, they will get better. But there's been some really interesting examples of people mess that up. There was DPD in the UK. They released a chatbot or upgraded their existing chatbot and gave it generative AI capabilities, and it ended up swearing at their customers and writing a haiku about how terrible DPD was, except it didn't get the haiku right either. And there was an air cat.
I've learned too much from humans at that point.
There you go.
I've learned way too much.
Yeah, didn't get the meter right at all. But and there was an Air Canada instance where they got taken to small claims court because their AI chatbot had made up a policy about bereavement flights, saying you could claim the money back rather than get the flight, rather than that you needed to agree the price in advance. And so someone claimed back 90% of their airfare for a bereavement flight because they were given bad advice by a chatbot. So that's examples of perhaps where FOBO has led people to do stuff a bit too quickly. But you're absolutely right. I think for us, it's that first application is perfect.
It's interesting what you both say, because it's this idea that yes, we want to get on top of this exciting technology and use it to the, you know, there are these uses that are going to be brilliant for us, but it's also, you kind of have to be using it and going through those processes to figure out, like you say, there's not a one size fits all approach here. You have to kind of be using it to understand what the capabilities, what the limitations are right now. Also what the, you know, if you speak to experts like yourself, you'll know what the capabilities are, but what we can actually do right now are probably very different with it. So it's kind of, it sounds like it's trying to figure out the best case or the best use for it right now. And I know there's been so many examples. When you were talking earlier, both of you, about sort of this new technology and not knowing about it, it reminded me of when social media was not social media in general, but when Facebook and Twitter and all these came on board, there was so much clamor for businesses to get into social media. And there was so much focus on, okay, well, how do we get our ROIs out of this? And it was kind of no, this is, you have to use social media completely differently now. It's not just get an intern in to just run your social media account. You need to have departments on this. And I think sustainability as well, CSR roles have gone down that route. So AI seems like it's down there where it's, you need to have dedicated teams to figure out what is the best case, what is the best use out of this going forward. I mean, do you either of you have any kind of specific examples? Jason, you mentioned obviously we at Mintel had this race to get Leap launched, and obviously that has evolved even over the last sort of 6 months. Sort of we have new implementations of it, which are great. But do you have any specific examples where Fobo has driven other businesses to adopt new technologies maybe a bit earlier than they planned, and then also how that has worked out for them?
I mean, actually, I'll confess, I used ChatGPT to look up this answer, because I couldn't think of any at the beginning, and I knew some of the stuff you were going to be asking me. One of the ChatGPT's answer that it came up with, it gave the example of the Boeing 737 MAX, where and that's kind of related to them needing to adopt technology. Airbus had come out with the A320neo, which was killing it on all the fuel efficiency things, and so Boeing 737 rushed out their MAX, and I think we all know some of the challenges they had to do with safety issues and software issues and training issues. So technology and technology advances do, and competition, and actually at the end of the day, it's the competition that drives you to do it. It's not the technology itself. It's the fear that everyone else is doing it, so you have to do it. And I think that you've got to be careful, and you've got to make sure that you know, to Ben's point, I think part of what he was getting at is make sure you know where the value is for you, and concentrate on the value, not the technology.
What would your advice be on that though? Then would it be get it out there and troubleshoot as you go, or is it the safer option to make sure before?
I think you need. It depends on the specific application and the risk, and your specific environment, but. The interesting thing is with ChatGPT and technologies like it, they're kind of like a general purpose technology. And so they can be applied in so many different places. And I don't think it's possible to do that centrally. You can't, you need to empower people to experiment with it safely and find their own applications and their own ways of getting value out of it. And that's one of the things we're trying to do at Mintel is to make it more accessible within the right guardrails and encourage people to find value from it. But there's a danger there, because you can spend a lot of time messing around and actually kind of go backwards. Boston Consulting Group did a study last year where, and it was with Harvard and Wharton and some other universities, where they looked at how they had two cohorts. One was using ChatGPT and one wasn't using ChatGPT. And they tested performance of their consultants on a range of tasks. And they found that, it improved performance dramatically on creative tasks. You could use it as an assistant to help you be creative and creative ideation and innovation. they found that it reduced performance somewhat on tasks where you were needing to make business decisions. And the reason for that was people were trusting the AI. So they were using the AI, trusting what came back, and kind of abdicating their responsibility to think. And so you need to be careful about where you do roll it out. And it, whatever you do needs to have that consideration. I guess it's just think a bit, right?
My head's going somewhere slightly different based on this question, this conversation. And I agree with you on this path. There's all about being mindful of how you're going after something. The 737 MAX and the race to imperfections and that sort of thing is a great analogy of what can happen when you're sacrificing quality and completeness for, you know, a race to a destination. But I think at the core of what we're talking about is trying to disrupt yourself before something else does. It's trying to disrupt your own business so that you can stay ahead of where you need to be. And I generally get this sense that, yes, Gen AI is amazing, and there's so many things that can be done with it, and we and others need to think about how it can be used. But there's the movie Moneyball. We all love the movie, and we think it's about analytics, and we think it's about data, and we think, oh, they moneyballed baseball. For those of you who don't know, watch the movie. It's the best way I can explain it, but effectively, you know, Brad Pitt comes in, he's the manager of the Angels in Los Angeles. I know nothing about baseball because I'm a data scientist. And he entered into a world of professional baseball in the U.S. where everyone was trying to optimize their team based on buying the best players. And so they had all these stats about the players, and they were trying to best buy the best players because the best players would create the best team, would create, you know, championship wins, would get you the World Series win. Logical, and it made sense. But the whole idea of Moneyball was that it was the wrong problem. They were trying to buy players, but they should have been trying to buy runs, because buying runs is what wins games, and winning games is what gets you a World Series. And so same idea, and there's like two different solutions to get to the same end result, but people can get lost in over-optimizing on one metric. It's just, you know, the general idea of like any KPI ceases to become a good KPI once you've over, you know, once you publish it, once you over go after one KPI, it ceases to be a good KPI. The same thing happens, I feel like, with technology. An innovative solution can stop you from being innovative if you're over-focused on one thing and over-focused on that one solution. So I think when you're thinking about AI and thinking about technology and how it can help you do what you need to do, this is obviously impacting this world and obviously needs to be considered as a capability that can help you and ourselves do a lot of new things. But if you focus on that technology and not on, this is what we need to achieve, this is what our clients want, this is what our users want, this is what our users need, how can we help them get there? You instead say, how can Gen AI help them get there? You'll have the Gen AI answer and maybe not the truly innovative answer. I mean, this is the BlackBerry. The BlackBerry was great, but then it just took, you know, the iPhone to come out and kick it to bed. So this sort of thing happens all the time.
I love the stories you've used to relate to there, because I'm immediately now thinking, yeah, we're thinking about Gen AI or thinking about how can AI help us with all of these big problems, when actually, to use your Moneyball example, we just need AI to get us on first. We just need to load those bases, like just doing those little steps first to get there. So I love that idea, because I know from what we're doing at Mintel, there's a whole host of, and Jason, you will probably sort of scoff at me when I sort of say that all the different things we're thinking about with AI, because you obviously know a lot more than I do. But it's amazing just to think of, there's so many different implementations we could have of this, and there's so many different ways it can help our clients and help us as a business and help us functionally. But it's all about, okay, how do we do those little things here and there just to tick off, rather than thinking there has to be this one big solution that it must solve with everything. It's almost looking at, okay, how can we sort of have that implemented application of AI to help us to free up more time for our employees, for our experts? How does it help them and give them, sort of turbocharge them, sort of add more value in the market research. It's helping the human side as well.
I think you're absolutely right. Our experts are one of the things that really differentiate us, and empowering those people is really important. But actually, the focus shouldn't be on the AI. The focus should be on what those experts can do to help our clients grow their businesses, and how they can join the dots and put things together and make recommendations that actually make a difference for people. And I think we are aware of that. This is something that we are keeping very much in focus. And I do think that AI has the power to do some of that stuff. I think it really does. I think it can help save people a lot of time, but only if it's executed well, only if it's implemented well. But I think that's some of the stuff we're going after with our big long list of things.
100%. And I mean, not to plug ourselves, right? But I think that's why we're working so well together, is because I'm a data scientist, which basically just means I'm a data skeptic, and I approach everything with what's wrong with this. And if I can prove everything not to be wrong, then it's right. And you can't just have that. You also have to have the optimist of everything. You know, this is all the great things that this could do. But if you have just one, you don't.
100%. Yeah. I am that unrealistic optimist. So.
And I'm the overly pessimistic pragmatist, right? And but like, together we meet in the middle somewhere, and great things happen. And I think that's what we're trying to say here, is you have to go after it, but you have to be realistic as well. And the other thing I want to say in relation to AI is, I think we all have different ideas in our heads of what that could mean, but artificial intelligence, this term is not new because of conversational AI, because of generative AI isn't new. Like it's just a new application that is more obvious in immediate use and implications. It's gotten excitement, but artificial intelligence is just programming of computers to do something that looks like something a human could have done, right? And that can be as tactical and explicit as just explicitly programming a chatbot to say hello when someone says hi to it, right? Or manually mapping words in English to words in French. Like, it can be as basic as that. It would still, you know, you could force it to look intelligent if you put enough time in it. What we have now is much, much better than that, and I think that's what's powerful about it. But what I'm trying to get to is, there are other applications of AI that I fear some people are just totally forgetting. Like the linear regression, as an example, is something that's still used all over the place and is really powerful to just understand correlations of two points next to each other. Basic, it doesn't solve everything. It's not great at everything, but don't try and solve a problem that could be solved with linear regression with this massive large language model, right? I mean, you have to have both sides of this. And I think this is on the same point of, you have to be looking at the problem that you're trying to solve, be aware of the technologies that are available to solve it, but don't overforce on one tech. Use them appropriately to solve the problems that you have.
Yeah, 100%.
I love that. I also love the image of having one of you on each one of my shoulders. So one being the positive, one being the negative. But that's a balance that I'm happy with and very comfortable with as well. I also think it's fascinating as well. You mentioned there about, because that is with, I guess, with any technology, and AI is the technology of the time right now. But you do rush to think, right, I need to implement this technology. But actually what you've said there is kind of actually what the most important thing is, what you actually want to do with it, and then find your best solution rather than thinking I must use this solution too.
Yeah, I think that's right. But the thing to bear in mind is that the advances in technology just over the last couple of years have made things possible that were not possible 12 months ago, even 6 months ago. And more than that, some of those things they've made possible with an order of magnitude less effort than you would have had to do something similar.
You're on the nose, Jason. Rush to understand the implications. Rush to understand the technology. Don't rush to shove it out into the market without understanding it well. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, 100%. Well, and if you do, you see stuff go wrong. If you still need to think you still need to make good decisions about things, but there are opportunities here, and that's what I'm excited about.
And it's happening so fast, and it's happening faster and faster and faster. So you definitely need to be investing and thinking about this and spending time on it. As an individual, if you're in this space, you need to be doing it and understanding the implications it has for you in any industry, right? And I don't think that there is a person in the world who couldn't use this technology in some way, shape, or form if it was accessible to them.
You're right, but there's still, and this is the other thing, if you're listening here today and you're thinking, oh, we're late, we've got to rush at it, the sky is falling in, you've got to remember that I think there was a survey done maybe by the Wall Street Journal recently where they said, or someone did it, reputable, and they said that still only 54% of adults in the US have heard of ChatGPT. And then a smaller percentage were using it at all, and then a smaller still percentage were using it regularly. But it's like it's low tens of percent are using these technologies regularly. So there's still a long, long way to go to adoption. And to your point about companies needing to find the best applications, ChatGPT is great for a certain set of things. Those kinds of technologies are great for a certain set of things, but I don't think yet there's the killer app. I think that's still to come.
Yeah, and we still seem to have. I mean, it's interesting you say there those figures from that study that we think is Wall Street Journal, but about the sort of the use of it, because there are so many skeptics out there as well. As much as there are so many pro people who are using it and trying to promote it as heavily as possible and finding great ways to use generative AI specifically. It is interesting. There is still this skepticism there, and there's still a lot to learn. As I say, it's this evolving beast, if you like. So I guess from our point of view, how would both of you say, how can we use AI to get better data or to create better models and analysis in our business specifically? How do we get the best out of it? How do we ensure that there is this balance between the human and the AI, this notion that the best insights come from human intuition interacting with that artificial intelligence and vice versa? What would you say is the best way to go about this?
I think we have to answer this question based on what we know of the technology right now. So, I mean, I want to just put that out there. In 2 months' time, there could be, you know, a new model that's going even better and further than where we're at. But I think the first thing that comes to mind is this idea of the Jace, you can speak to the closed loop architecture that we have with how we're using it with our Leap AI, which I think is ultimately important because we have insights and reports and content that our experts are doing research into and creating that content. And I think application of AI in that use case is being able to do deeper and richer research, right? So as AI assistants are coming out in different fields, or as our own is being created, you're able to spend less time finding proper information. Now, some of that needs to be replaced with more time validating it. You have to be careful there, right? And I think that's an important call out. There's some use in these technologies of helping your just natural creativity. And as a researcher, you're asking questions to yourself and you're digging through, and it's helpful sometimes to be able to talk to it's the rubber duck. As software developers, we call it a rubber duck. You know, you want to talk through your code to a rubber duck just so that you're having to vocalize it and think through it. I think that these AIs can be that rubber duck to researchers and people that are generating content and generating research and creating insight, and can be powerful in that way, so long as they're validating where those things are coming from. And that's in the creation side of it. There's the user side of it then, which is the same thing, but in reverse, which is using these AIs to find human generated insight and much more easily, much more quicker. And so it just explodes. It's information transfer, right? This is like a step in how we communicate information between humans, like the written word was. It was, you know, it can go so much faster and so much more quickly in this technology.
That's an interesting, I've never thought of it like that, but that's an interesting way of doing it. It transforms information from one format to a more useful format. That's kind of interesting. But I think some of what you're saying is that you've got to find the right applications. So, you know, how's it going to help? How's it going to transform things? You've got to find the right applications. And it's really good at reading and summarizing and transforming information. One of the other things that you can use it for, and we're starting to do this, is if you've got a huge amount of data to process, text data, and there are a lot of companies doing this kind of thing, one of the things it can do is it can understand data at scale and extract not insights but facts or key terms or key concepts from that information. And it can do that. So there are applications where you can use it to do that kind of stuff. And you can analyze data sets that you wouldn't do by hand because it would take you too long. So analyzing verbatims from surveys, that's kind of a fairly obvious thing that you can get it to do, and helping you find the themes in those things. And as Ben said, you don't just then trust it, you then verify it and review it. But that's one way that it can help unlock the power in existing content and data, is to help you analyze the meaning of content that you've got at scale that you just wouldn't do by hand. So that's one thing.
Translations
along the same thing as well. The multimodal AIs or the voice models now are getting really good at listening and understanding what you're saying. But AI generally, and we use this, and your team's done a lot on this, Ben, is it helps you find patterns in data that you wouldn't otherwise have been able to find. And that massively transforms and elevates the value of that data. And that's kind of more traditional AI, if you like, but the value of that should not be underestimated.
It's fascinating. Both of you in this brief conversation we've had have mentioned so many different applications already. So again, there's not like a one, we must do this or we must do them all. But it's just finding what works right for you. I know from speaking with a number of ingredient suppliers, for example, people working in regulation around ingredients in the beauty sector, for example, a lot of them are saying to me, I couldn't do my job without AI now, because we've trained and we've coded in a certain way that it finds the information, or it does everything quicker for us. It saves us that time. It's really fascinating, because it's that idea that we do have to be flexible with this technology, and sort of have your target, find the right application for yourself. And I love what you said earlier, actually, Ben, as well, about try to disrupt yourself before someone else or something else does it. I love that kind of idea behind that. Is there, unfortunately, I think we're probably coming towards the end of our conversation. We could definitely talk about this, and I probably will try and press you both to come on the podcast again and just continue this conversation, because I feel like this half hour has absolutely flown by. But just to end, is there anything you predict, or how do you predict the role of Gen AI specifically, because mainly what we're talking about at the moment, how do you predict that will evolve in market research over the next decade? And do you think, or would you want to put your neck on the line and say what the next big thing is going to be? Big question to end there, boys, but there we go.
For my part, how is Gen AI going to affect things? I think as the technology gets better and companies get better at applying it for their specific applications and individuals get better at using it, I think it is going to transform people's productivity. Right? I mean, and that's what I hope happens, is that everyone has more time. And if productivity grows in our business and anyone's business, then growth follows, and kind of that tide lifts everyone, in individuals and companies. So that's what I hope is going to happen. And I think there's every chance it will. In terms of what the next big thing is, that's almost impossible to say. I don't think that Gen AI as it stands is the solution for artificial general intelligence, you know, super intelligences, but I do think it's probably part of it, and that we'll either come up with new things or new ways of putting AI components together. And when that happens, I mean, it's possible that everything will change. But again, there'll be an adoption curve, and it will take years and years for that to happen. It won't happen immediately.
Now for the pessimist view.
I know, I was going to say that we need to balance now. We need to balance.
And this is going to be more of a warning. I think in market research in particular and other fields that are generating content and insights, we have to be careful to not allow computer-generated insight and summarization to force us into this average, because that's what can happen, right?
Yeah.
This is going to allow us... What's going to happen is we're going to have way more written communication than ever before, because ChatGPT, these generative AIs are going to make written conversation much more efficient. And so as a result, more data, more written conversation is going to come out of all of this. And if we rely too heavily on the AIs as they currently exist to generate all of that content, eventually us as humans are going to start to recognize what GPT created versus what a human created. There's going to just be this uncanny valley of it seems too perfect, or it seems too on the nose, or it seems too just like what a normal average person would say, and doesn't have any unique characteristics or personality in itself. And maybe there's some things that can be created to combat that, but over time, there really could be a fear of just, you can start to see, oh, this was an AI personality versus a real personality, and we could lose creativity, we could lose real thinking, and we could just end up having information that we have today in our world be the status quo in terms of market research. I think other industries, sciences and stuff, that it could have different impacts, but in ours, more content is going to be created. And I think in order to stand out, you're going to have unique and meaningful content, or at the very least, that's my pessimist view. And it's more of a warning. It might not actually happen.
Let me follow up on that, because I think you're right, but it doesn't have to be that way, right?
You don't have to
use it to create more, less helpful information, but there is a risk. I agree.
There's going to be two types of companies. Yeah. There's going to be the ones that over-index on efficiency and end up creating just bland content that is just not newsworthy, not innovative, not really critical. And then I think there's the path which you and I both are pushing Mintel to be on, which is, this is about empowering our human expertise to be more human and to spend less time on the mundane and more time on that critical.
100%.
And that's what's really critical. But there may be a section of our industry that goes to conformity. What I think is going to happen in the future, Andy, sorry we're going over, has nothing to do about AI. And I know nothing about this field. It's just my gut. But as we as humans use this and rely on this tech more often, and it becomes more applicable in more places, something is going to happen with regards to our technology around how we extract and store energy and how we do compute. These models are massive and they consume tons of energy and tons of space. And if it's truly going to be as powerful as we're thinking it's going to be, and it's going to have the impact to everyone that we think it's going to have, something has to happen on that side. I know nothing about that. That's just my philosopher's view.
No, but I love that. I love that. So you heard it here first now. You may well have hammered your master in there to when this topic does come up in future. It's going to be right. We're going to have to go speak to Ben about it now. I thank you so much both for your wrap up there as well. It was almost perfect, because you say it was an optimist and pessimist, but I think we can probably all agree on the fact that it is going to be this balance of whether you are an optimist or a pessimist. The good thing for humans is that the future is going to be this balance of this artificial intelligence and human roles working together, and how we navigate that for the future is going to be the challenge, but it's also going to be hopefully quite rewarding as well. So thank you both very much. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Ben. I know your time is very, very precious. So thank you both for being here today and having this conversation. As I say, I will try and push and get you back again. But thank you both anyway for your insights.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for listening as well. But the conversation doesn't end here. If you head over to Mintel's LinkedIn and Instagram page, you can let us know what you think. We'd love to hear your thoughts on AI and how your business is using it, or how you see the future looking in this space as well, whether positive or negative. They're all welcome views here. If you want to know more about Mintel, then visit mintel.com and sign up to become a member of the free Mintel Spotlight community. And make sure you never miss an episode of Mintel's Little Conversation by subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. So all that's left for me to say is, again, a huge big thank you to Jason and Ben both for joining me today. Again, thank you very much for listening. Goodbye for now, and we'll catch you next time on the new episode of Little Conversation.